You're listening to an African Elements top news story for April 21st, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. The Guardian's Restorative Justice Plan, Exploring the Deep Historical Roots. The Scott Trust holds full ownership of the Guardian newspaper. The organization recently launched the next phase of its ambitious restorative justice program. This specific plan spans the years from 2026 to 2030. The initiative addresses the uncomfortable truth about the newspaper and its origins. The founders of the publication built their initial wealth directly through the transatlantic slave trade. They profited massively from the extreme exploitation of enslaved African people. Academic researchers from the University of Nottingham and the University of Hull spent years uncovering these historical connections. Their thorough research established a verified foundation for the new funding commitments. The resulting expansion specifically targets marginalized descendant communities in both the United States and Jamaica. The Scott Trust officially shifted its approach from issuing public apologies to delivering active and meaningful repair. The organization committed over $12 million for this massive 10-year effort. To ensure the funds reach the right places, the Trust established new leadership roles. In late 2024 and 2025, the organization appointed dedicated local managers. Ahmed Reed oversees the vital operations in Jamaica. Angel Parson directs the community efforts across the United States. They work closely with Keisha Thompson, who manages the program from Manchester. This diverse leadership team ensures that the community directly guides the distribution of the funds. They listen to the specific needs of the descendants rather than imposing outside solutions. John Edward Taylor founded the renowned newspaper in the year 1821. Before entering the publishing world, he worked as a highly successful cotton merchant in Manchester. His company operated under the name Shuttleworth, Taylor & Company. The firm specialized in importing raw cotton produced entirely by enslaved labor. The business specifically targeted the Lowcountry regions of Georgia and South Carolina. These coastal agricultural areas produced a highly prized and expensive crop known as Sea Island cotton. This specific plant featured incredibly long and silky fibers. The elite textile manufacturers in Manchester considered it the perfect material for luxury goods. Because of its superior quality, Sea Island cotton commanded exceptionally high prices in European markets. Historical invoice books reveal the immense scale of this operation. Records show that Taylor and his company received at least 214 bags of this specific cotton over a brief 8-month period. This volume of trade generated massive concentrated wealth for the merchants. The immense profits from this cruel enterprise provided the necessary capital to launch the newspaper. Without the forced labor occurring on the slave plantations of the Deep South, the publication would never have existed. The financial foundation of the media empire relied entirely on human suffering. The historical origin of the newspaper contains a massive contradiction. Taylor established the publication as a direct response to the infamous Peterloo Massacre of 1819. During this horrific event, armed cavalry charged into a peaceful crowd of 60,000 demonstrators in Manchester. The citizens were simply protesting for parliamentary reform and basic human rights. The brutal attack resulted in the deaths of at least 15 people. Taylor witnessed the violence firsthand and wrote scathing reports to hold the government authorities accountable. The original prospectus of the newspaper proudly committed the publication to the defense of civil and religious liberty. The name Peterloo served as an ironic pun on the Battle of Waterloo. It suggested that the British government used military force to oppress its own citizens. However, the true irony lies within the financial structure of the newspaper itself. While the publication championed the rights of the local working class, the required funding dripped with the blood of the transatlantic slave trade. The founders purchased their liberal platform using profits derived from human bondage. Furthermore, the early editorial board frequently protected the textile industry. The newspaper even expressed open hostility toward early abolitionist movements that threatened their lucrative commercial supply chains. Taylor did not build the media company alone. He relied heavily on 11 wealthy financial backers to support his new venture. Academic researchers investigated these individuals and discovered deeply troubling connections. One prominent financier was Sir George Phillips. Phillips was not merely a passive investor in the cotton trade. He operated as a direct enslaver with major holdings in the Caribbean. Phillips served as the co-owner of the massive Success sugar plantation located in Hanover, Jamaica. Historical ledgers confirm that 108 enslaved people lived and labored under brutal conditions on this specific estate. Phillips accumulated massive personal wealth by exploiting these African captives. In 1833, the British government passed the Slavery Abolition Act. Following this legislation, the government set aside £20 million to compensate the slave owners. The enslaved people themselves received nothing. Phillips filed a personal claim to receive compensation for the people he previously enslaved. Legal complications and counterclaims from creditors caused his personal request to fail. However, his direct business partner successfully claimed over £1,900. In modern currency, that payout equals approximately £200,000. The failure of his specific legal claim does not erase the terrible reality. His wealth, built on human suffering, actively supported the rise of the newspaper. The restorative justice expansion focuses significant energy on the Gullah Geechee descendant communities. These unique communities reside along the coastal regions and sea islands of the United States. Their ancestors endured forced migration from West Africa, specifically because of their advanced agricultural knowledge. Enslavers demanded their unmatched expertise in cultivating difficult crops like rice and cotton. The intense geographic isolation of islands like Sapelo and Hilton Head protected the community from outside influences. This separation allowed the people to preserve a beautiful Creole language and distinct cultural traditions. Modern initiatives strive to protect the deep origins of the Gullah culture from cultural erasure. The academic research uncovered specific names tied directly to the founders of the newspaper. Investigators studied the detailed accounting books of the Spanish Wells Plantation, located on Hilton Head. They discovered the names of individuals who harvested the exact cotton shipped to Manchester. The records identify specific people including Toby, Clorinda, Billy, and a 7-year-old girl named Nancy. The program targets the modern heritage corridor to honor these exact individuals. Today, over 200,000 descendants live within this designated cultural zone. The trust aims to provide resources that directly benefit the modern families of those who endured such horrific exploitation. Gullah Geechee descendants currently face massive legal threats regarding their ancestral lands. Many families hold their property through an unstable legal structure known as heirs' property. This situation develops when land passes from one generation to the next without a formal written will. Over several decades, dozens or even hundreds of descendants become co-owners of the land. The law refers to this fractional ownership as tenancy in common. Because there is no single clear title, the families cannot use the property as collateral for loans. They also face extreme difficulty accessing standard government disaster relief programs. The lack of a clear title creates severe economic stagnation for the owners. This complex legal structure makes the families incredibly vulnerable to aggressive land developers. Under current laws, any single heir can sell their tiny fractional share to an outside corporation. The corporation then acquires the legal right to force a partition sale. In a partition sale, the court orders the complete auction of the entire family estate. This process often results in the land selling for a fraction of its true market value. In the coastal regions of South Carolina and Georgia, developers use this exact tactic to seize valuable property. They transform ancestral lands into expensive luxury resorts and golf courses. This predatory practice remains a primary driver of generational land loss for Black families. The Scott Trust allocated significant funds to combat this specific legal crisis. The program created a specialized legal aid category known as the Restoration of Ownership of Family Sites, or ROOFS. This critical initiative helps families secure formal ownership of their historical properties. The primary goal is to help descendants quiet their titles. Quieting a title is a complex legal process that resolves ownership disputes and creates a single, stable legal document. The legal fees required for this process are typically too expensive for families facing fractionated ownership. The new Justice Fund covers these prohibitive legal costs entirely. Securing these land titles is essential for economic survival. Organizations like the Center for Heirs' Property Preservation work alongside the trust to prevent forced partition sales. When families finally convert their fractionated ownership into a family trust, they gain real economic power. They can apply for mortgages, improve their homes, and access federal agricultural grants. Protecting real estate remains the most effective strategy for building generational wealth within marginalized groups. The Roofs Initiative acts as a powerful defensive shield against systemic displacement. The program helps communities who constantly fought for economic justice against wealthy corporate interests. The Restorative Justice Plan places a major focus on the parish of Hanover in Jamaica. Hanover holds deep historical significance because it contained the Success Plantation. The enslaved people here endured the brutal conditions typical of the colonial sugar industry. Today, the descendants in this exact region face overwhelming threats from severe climate change. A projected disaster scenario, modeled as Hurricane Melissa, highlights the terrible vulnerability of the island. Scientific projections use simulated Category 5 storms to help organizations plan for future disasters. The model predicts that such a storm could cause nearly $9 billion in national damage. The scenario indicates that 150,000 homes could suffer total destruction. The historical legacy of slavery left communities like Hanover with severe poverty and inadequate infrastructure. This historical theft of wealth makes the modern population incredibly vulnerable to extreme weather. The Scott Trust committed substantial funds to promote climate-resilient reconstruction in the area. The program targets over 1,000 specific households for immediate structural support. The initiative will provide stronger roofing materials and better foundational supports. By investing in climate justice, the organization acknowledges that historical harm requires modern physical protection. Education represents a massive portion of the newly announced expansion. The organization formed deep partnerships with historically Black colleges and universities across the United States. Leaders established these vital institutions primarily after the Civil War. At that time, racist laws completely barred Black Americans from attending traditional white universities. HBCUs provided the only path to higher education for formerly enslaved people and their descendants. These schools carry a unique historical mission centered entirely on community uplift and empowerment. They maintain a distinct birthright of engagement designed to dismantle systemic inequalities. The modern partnership provides expensive journalism bursaries and intensive training programs for students. HBCUs serve as the primary researchers and protectors of African American history. This makes them the perfect partners for changing the public narrative. The curriculum incorporates culturally responsive teaching that values the lived experiences of Black students. Operating under President Donald Trump, federal policies require institutions to navigate complex rules regarding educational funding. However, private trusts maintain the freedom to fully support these specialized programs. This investment directly attacks the long-standing racial inequities found within the mainstream media industry. The educational investments focus deeply on implementing decolonized curricula. Traditional history classes typically prioritize a biased Western perspective. This outdated method often glorifies the colonizers while ignoring the suffering of the oppressed. Decolonizing education requires the total decentering of Western systems of knowledge. It forces institutions to acknowledge the massive contributions of marginalized global communities. This approach goes far beyond simple inclusion. It actively challenges how historical stories are constructed and questions why certain voices were intentionally silenced. To achieve this, educators must use alternate methodologies to uncover the truth. Traditional colonial archives often dehumanized enslaved people, treating them only as property on ledgers. Decolonized programs rely heavily on oral histories and detailed community testimonies. Journalism students receive training to report on multicultural societies with a fresh perspective. They learn to recognize how structural racism shapes modern events and public policy. The program empowers a new generation of writers to produce stories that honor their ancestors. This critical shift ensures that the media landscape becomes far more accurate and historically honest. The massive $10 million fund focuses entirely on indirect reparations. The organization channels the money into community-level grants rather than writing checks to individual descendants. The funding supports broad initiatives like legal aid for land rights and global news fellowships. The primary goal is to create wide-reaching systemic benefits for the descendant communities in Jamaica and the Sea Islands. The Trust believes that investing in physical infrastructure and education provides the most sustainable path to repair. While researchers identified hundreds of specific enslaved ancestors, the funds support the larger community to ensure long-term impact. As governments move toward reparations, private organizations are exploring different financial models. Some critics and activists argue against this specific methodology. They believe that direct cash payments to the descendants represent the only true form of restorative justice. Critics point out that the community-led approach conveniently avoids the immense legal complexities of individual compensation claims. Direct payouts require extensive genealogical verification and massive administrative costs. However, the trust maintains that their community-focused programs address the deeper structural issues caused by slavery. By funding legal defenses and educational institutions, the organization hopes to permanently break the cycles of generational poverty. The massive financial commitment naturally invites intense public scrutiny. The £10 million fund operates over a 10-year timeline. This represents an enormous increase from the tiny amount of capital originally used to launch the newspaper. In 1821, Taylor raised roughly £1,100 to start his business. Today, that equals less than £100,000. The new Justice Fund clearly dwarfs the original investment. Furthermore, the unique structure of the Scott Trust protects the editorial independence of the newspaper. The trust has no private shareholders demanding dividends. This firewall allowed the editor-in-chief to commission severe investigations into the owners themselves. Despite these protections, critics heavily question the ultimate sustainability and fairness of the amount. Recent financial reports value the total Scott Trust endowment at over £1 billion. The dedicated Restorative Justice Fund represents less than 1% of their total institutional wealth. Many observers echoing historical exploitation argue that the amount is minimal compared to the multi-generational profits extracted from the cotton trade. They describe the commitment as completely inadequate when measuring the true cost of human bondage. The organization responds by describing the current fund as merely a vital first step. They view the money as an expected investment that will continuously grow through future community partnerships. Copyright, African Elements.